know that what was the result? 3-0. 3-0. Do you know what this means? 3-0. But also mean 3 premierships, and I won more premierships alone than the other 19 managers together. 3 for me and 2 for them. Respect, 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 man, respect, 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 man.
What a way to start a show. Jose looking for respect. In the words of the late, great Aretha Franklin, R-E-S-P-E-C-T. That's what Jose Mourinho is looking for. Now, welcome. Pitch Invasion. I'm joined by Mika, and Waz is not here with us. But we promise to keep the show rolling as usual with some meaty football discussions and a bit of banter here and there, Mika.
Absolutely. I mean, look, Jose Mourinho has been... Well, he's looking for respect. He's not going to get respect that way. I mean, you, respect is earned.
Does he deserve it?
No, respect is earned.
He hasn't earned it.
And he hasn't earned it. He's actually...
3 Premier League titles.
Well, I mean, you go from trying to justify a 3-0 defeat by the fact that you've won 3 Premier League titles, and then suddenly you take a dig at 19 Premier League managers. These guys, some of them have only just come to the Premier League. And, you know, Mourinho hasn't won 3 Premier League titles at Manchester United. He won his titles at Chelsea, at Manchester United, arguably the biggest club in the world, even if coming from a Liverpool fan. He's just not understanding that it's not about him anymore.
That was a bit strange, though, that he would actually have a dig at the other 19 managers. I mean... You just lost 3-0,
it makes you wonder,
what does that have to do with the other 19 managers?
When he said that, I kept saying to myself, okay, so who are the managers that he's trying to take a dig at?
I mean, 6 or 7 of them have just come into the league.
I mean, Pep Guardiola, and of course, who else amongst the whole lot has won the Premier League title? It would be Pellegrini, who's just come back to the Premier League. So, you know, that Mourinho would actually take his time and go through all the managers in the league. One thing that he's missing is the fact that the league is no longer the same as when he was dominating, because you've got a lot of really exciting managers with modern coaching methods. Look at Sarri at Chelsea. He's changed the team from being ultra-defensive, counter-attacking team under Conte to this really exciting attacking team. And, you know, you look at Wolves, look at Silva at Everton. Some of these young managers are changing the way the game is being played. And that's one thing Mourinho is not accepting, that his methods are becoming kind of dated.
You know, to me, it seemed like a premeditated excuse, because, you know, for somebody to know, you know, the aggregate of all the 19 managers' league titles compared to him, it seems like it's something he had in his pocket. I'm sure by the time the third goal came in, you know, he was thinking of all sorts of excuses to give. And I'm sorry, to have your doors blown down like that, you know, at Old Trafford, and straight afterwards at the press conference, you're asking for respect. I think Jose, you know, I said this in the first episode of the podcast, I think the weight of Manchester United is just, you know, is too much for him. And coming into the season, they didn't address any of their problems in the transfer market. Already he's had comments to say about players and Ed Woodward. You know what? I won't be surprised if Jose actually resigns before he gets fired to save face. That's what I predict. I think Jose is going to leave the club before they say, you know what, we tried.
He wants to change the conversation from the game. And, you know, earlier when he was interviewed before the press conference, he talked about how he denied Spurs, so much opportunities, and that they got their first goal because there was some corner. Look, the point is, Tottenham totally blew Manchester United out of Old Trafford.
They crushed them.
And, you know, that game could have been 5. I know United had one or two chances earlier, but, I mean, in that second half, it could have been 5-0.
The players almost seem to have given up, though, Mika. Could that not just be a trend as to how maybe they feel about Jose Mourinho? Because, I mean, a United side, even, you know, we always talk about Fergie time, that fight for United until the end, how United traditionally play. It seemed like they almost gave up on him. I mean, even the third goal, it didn't seem like there was any hustle from the back four.
I don't know.
They just resigned.
I don't know.
They kicked the bucket.
If we are ever going to have Fergie time, I think Fergie's time is over. And just to put that into perspective, since Alex Ferguson left, Manchester United has spent £700 million.
Oof, that's a lot of
money. That's, you know, how much, how...
I don't even think Arsenal have spent that, you know, in how 21 you know how
Mourinho
years.
Mourinho talks about, okay, he's won more than all the other ones. He needs to put all the spending of all of those clubs and see where they stack up against Manchester United. They spent £700 million, and under him they spent almost £400 million.
He spent and 80 million on one player. Of course you're going to get a lot of grief the moment things go bad.
He still wants to spend money on players, and Ed Woodward, you know, rightly said, look, I don't want to, I don't think those players that you want to buy have, you know, are really worth that.
You know what Ed Woodward is basically saying to Mourinho? Do your job and coach. It's as simple as that. Just do your job and coach. You've got Pogba, who's just won the World Cup. Lukaku had a fantastic World Cup. Do your job and coach. But moving on to Spurs, I think we have to give Spurs a lot of credit. And somebody who had a good game last night, Lucas Moura, was also vocal about Spurs' chances this season. And he fancies them, and he says, you know, they are capable this season. And, you know, have we sat down and ignored Tottenham?
I don't think so.
I mean, look, they didn't spend.
Yes, I don't think so. The one thing that they haven't done, ever since Tottenham sold Gareth Bale, they've been, you know, improving that team, except the last transfer window, and you know, they brought in Lucas Moura during the mid-season last season, and he had a fairly decent run out. But we've seen that team really evolve, and the fact that they managed to keep Toby Alderweireld, and they kept Son, they kept a few of the players that some other clubs wanted to prize away. And, you know, shockingly...
To interrupt you, yeah. The transfer window in Europe hasn't closed.
It hasn't yet.
We don't know. We don't know if they're going to lose some of the players.
Look, Levy is one of the hardest bargainers. I don't think he wants to sell Harry Kane or Dele Alli.
People have transfer clauses, and with
the way they've started the season, I bet you Tottenham are not going to be able to buy any player now. So obviously what they're going to try and do is see how far it gets them. And don't forget they just built a new stadium, which hasn't been completed. And they might just be where Arsenal were a few years ago, because when you spend so much money in a new stadium, you don't want to spend a lot of money on players. But they've got the quality in the team, and they've got a manager who's not under pressure to deliver.
But are they the real deal? When you look at that Spurs side, I mean, last night, they were fantastic.
They've been knocking on the door.
Did that side give an indication last night that they could do great things?
For the past three seasons, Tottenham have, I mean, two seasons ago, they came very close. They also did well in the Champions League, and last season they were in the hunt for Champions League places for the entire season. And so when you look at them, I think that, I'm not saying they win, because I think that something is still missing. I think that they don't have all the players that they need probably to be able to go the entire season. But maybe they will look at how they perform and say, okay, maybe halfway through the season, maybe we need to bring in a few players. But they are looking really good. And I'm happy that they're going to face Liverpool maybe in 2 weeks.
Happy they're going to face Liverpool after the loss?
Listen, when I say I'm happy, I'm speaking from my head now.
Give us your heart. What does your heart tell you? You can't be happy that Spurs, who just thrashed United at Old Trafford, you are happy that they're going to play Liverpool.
I want to say that when they play Liverpool, we will know which of the two teams has more of the verve to go all out. Because you remember that the two teams that really took Liverpool out last season was Manchester City at home and then Tottenham at Wembley. And it was from that game that Liverpool's season changed. So now it's an opportunity for us to gauge where they are, both of them.
Without being obvious about which team I support in North London, the real North London team, I still think Spurs are lacking. And, you know, they didn't buy anybody in this transfer window. You cannot tell me that they're going to carry this on for 38 games, haven't signed anybody. Because now Son needs to win the Asian Games, first of all. Otherwise, 21 months of military service, which he has to do. It's compulsory. So that's the one aspect where they have to pray that South Korea win the Asia Games. Now, they are one injury away up front, either Kane or Lucas. I mean, Nkudu, he's gone out on loan. And, you know, Harry Winks, you know, unproven. So I'm not sure they actually have the muscle to go 38 games and there's no way Kane is going to score another 40 goals this season to save Tottenham.
Normally he doesn't score in August. He's already scoring. So, you know, this is Harry Kane.
Maybe that's bad luck. Maybe he needs to go August without scoring and then
Harry Kane
maybe he's broken his bad
Harry
luck.
Kane has
all
shown,
the superstition.
Kane has shown that there. He can score. Even went to the World Cup, even though he scored some penalties, but he was top scorer in the World Cup. One thing I know for a fact is that they're going to buy players in January if they see the need.
How do you know that for a fact, Amika? They didn't buy in July.
Because they didn't buy anyone now doesn't mean they don't have any money. I think that if they start well, which they have, if they carry on like this, they might look at it and say, we need to reinforce to see how far we go. But look, it's going to be quite an exciting season.
In my opinion, they've played cupcakes. So until they start, like you said, when they play Liverpool, we'll start seeing the real Tottenham. And, you know, we can assess them further from there. But moving it on to our shores, South Africa. A team that, you know, at the start of the season, a lot of noise from their camp, a lot of optimism. Talking about Kaizer Chiefs, Amakhosi, and not really hitting their straps this season. I mean, they had the big signing of Kama Bilyat, which was a coup. And he hasn't really, you know, made the impact that he had at Sundowns. You would have thought that Castro combination would have kicked in, and it hasn't so far.
It's early days, and Amakhosi, you know, they've got new coach, they've got... It's a few games into the season. They're still in the cup. They managed to claw their way back into that game against Supersport United, so they've got all to play for at FNB. And then, of course, in the league, is where they've been this really, really indifferent team with so many draws. Let's see what happens in that second leg, and see if they progress to the finals, because maybe they might just get to the finals and they need that tonic to spark their season, but who knows?
Well, that's what they thought last year with the Nedbank Cup, and things just took a turn for the worse. So, you know, I'm not so sure about the cup competitions with Chiefs lately, you know, and we better get their fans in check in that second leg before something goes wrong, because I still see a team that's lacking in quality all round. You know, Kama Bilyat, to me, he's playing like a desperate player. I don't see that poise, that composure that I saw at Sundowns.
He had so much more quality around him at Sundowns. And playing in Africa the way they did, that team...
So Chiefs don't have qualities.
Listen, they do have, but I'm saying that the Sundowns, in the run-up that they had to that magical campaign that they had in Africa, there was so much riding on that team. And then, you know, they've got a huge squad. And over time, you know, they evolved into... I must say that they played some of the best football, even though it's beginning to bite them now, because
they haven't
had enough rest. But I'd say don't write off Chiefs yet. Let's give them a couple more games, and then we will be able to... But I must say that in the league, they just haven't been...
They haven't impressed me much, yeah. I must say.
I was happy they came with the way they came back in that game against Supersport United.
Well, let's move to the MTN 8 now. Obviously, Sundowns, as we've just news come in, they're out of the African Champions League, which is sad for South African football. But they're still in the MTN 8, and things didn't go too well. 1-0 loss is not so bad, considering they've got a second leg. What's your take on the second leg, and how do you think they're going to do?
You know, they rested players, obviously, because they wanted to try and get through the CAF Champions League.
It didn't work out.
It didn't work out. So it'll be everything. They're gonna throw in the kitchen sink in this second leg. But you know, even recently at home, they've struggled. You know, we've seen this with Chiefs. With Orlando Pirates a few seasons ago. We've seen it with Supersport United. Unless the South African season is aligned with the CAF season, every team that plays in Africa gets to that point where, you know, everything comes to a head and
they burn out.
You know, they burn out. So Sundowns, they can pretend as much as they want that they've got a big squad, but you need to have your core team take you through. I mean, this is the cup semifinals.
I mean, even I think Bizzo as well burns out himself. I mean, as a coach, I mean, there's only so much tactics-wise that you can come up every week. He's playing a different competition, it seems. And, you know, last week he was preparing for Cape Town City. This week it's Oroya. And then the second leg again for the MTN 8. I think as a coach, I'm sure Peace was also reaching that stage where he's burning out himself.
Rather than go on holiday, I remember he went to Russia and for the World Cup. And that's not a holiday, because if you're a coach, you know, it's
take massive, your mind off massive football, yeah, massive spend time with family.
So maybe he actually needed a holiday. He needed to go off to a beach or something, because Pizzo and the players have definitely burned out. And no mistake about it.
You can see it.
I mean, Sundowns in Africa, almost unable to win games at home. It's really...
Which is strange, because the year they won it, they were unbeatable at home.
Even last season they did well. In their home game. But, oh, I mean, you can't play the way they've done without a rest.
That's not possible. But we'll take a short break and we'll touch on the other side of Europe, other news and interesting stories that have made headlines. And we'll see you right after this break.
You know what makes us better? Rivalry. This is the Absa Premiership.
Welcome back to Pitch Invasion, and we're going to get straight into it with some European news. Cristiano Ronaldo, why not? He's always on the news. He's still yet to register in Serie A, Mika. Is that cause for concern?
I think for CR7, there's always cause for concern when he doesn't score goals. But like we saw last season, he started the season, you know, struggling to score, and then suddenly he hit a patch where he was just scoring every week. I think he'll score goals ultimately, but he needs to understand that he's gone to a new team. He needs to learn to play for the team. He needs to create chances for others.
He had a golden chance in that game.
Yes, and then one thing with him also, you can see his frustration whenever he doesn't score, or he's looking for someone to pass the ball to him all the time. He can't play. I've seen players go to Serie A, and it's a very difficult league because the teams naturally, in their mindset, they still have a lot of Italian players in their team. So
very defensive.
So defensive, you know, is part of their DNA, and they know how to mark people. If I had a point that thought after watching Juve eliminate Real Madrid in 2015, you know, I was surprised at how easy they were able to blow them out of the park in the cup final, and also last year when they met in the Champions League. There's something about Ronaldo. Is, you know, yes, he scored against you know, Juventus in cup games, but in league games, these teams have enough time to work their methods and play in their very unique arenas. He's got to learn how to work through that system without making it all about him.
I think he's going to struggle in Serie A. He's going to score, right, over 20. But I think he's going to struggle, and I'll tell you why. Because La Liga is a very... they play an open game in La Liga. Teams actually go out to win games. And in Serie A, teams go out not to lose games.
Yeah.
And it's like, when it's I look at the style, the contrast, the teams have
20 Mourinho.
Yes. So La Liga suited Ronaldo's style of play. Open play, he can get behind players, he can get the guys out wide to get behind those players so they can get the crosses into him. Serie A, very slow, defensive, counter-attack. That is just the opposite of what Ronaldo needs. And I'm still not sure he's going to get to that level of CR7 Madrid at Juventus, but in the Champions League, obviously, he's a different beast. And I think that's where he's going to flourish more, in the Champions League than in Serie A, because obviously in the Champions League, teams are also playing open football. Teams need to win games.
Ronaldo needs just one goal, and he will get it either by a penalty or he'll get it by whatever means. Once he gets it, you know, so every time he gets one goal.
Can you imagine the parties that night in Turin, the day Ronaldo registers?
I mean, look, I've learned over time not to bet against Ronaldo, because I think that he is just one of a different species of goal scorers. He will score.
Okay, well, let's talk about Ronaldo's former team, Real Madrid, who made a huge signing, Thibaut Courtois, but he hasn't started.
Well, you know, did they need a new keeper?
That's what's strange, that they actually didn't need a new keeper.
They needed a new keeper years ago, but I think, you know,
even years ago, I still think Keylor Navas is one heck of a fantastic goalkeeper. In fact, two of the three Champions Leagues that they did win were because of Keylor Navas, because he made saves when they were either 0-0 or they were 1-0 up that could have changed the dynamics of the game. I remember the one save I think he made of Mane in the final when the score was 1-1. And, you know, the next season the guy's deemed surplus to requirement. Now, Thibaut Courtois comes in. I would have assumed that he would have gone straight into the starting lineup. And what's the hold up there? What do you think the hold
Madrid
up is?
Madrid is about who's the keeper, who's the player, what's his name, what's his profile. You know, Navas is a great keeper, but, you know, he's not flamboyant enough. Madrid still needs to sell that narrative and, you know, drive people to their games, drive people to their social platforms, drive people to their marketing programs. That's what they're all about. I think that they still need to bring in. I saw a story about them looking at possibly bringing back James Rodriguez, because I think he's still on loan.
He's still on loan, yes.
But they need to get a marquee signing to replace Ronaldo, because it's quite clear when they play, you see that gap is just there.
But I must say though, Mika, having watched them on Sunday play, there's something different about them when Ronaldo's not there. And at the expense of criticism from people listening, they actually played better without Ronaldo in terms of a collective.
Definitely.
In terms of a collective. You could see when they were playing, they weren't just looking for Ronaldo. They were making passes. They were making 1-2s. And something looked fluid about them. Whereas I think, of course, Ronaldo always gives you that advantage being Ronaldo. He is going to score. But in terms of just the style of play
and
the beauty.
His goals, you know, his goals brought a lot of difference to their play. You know, there are games where, you know, he drags them out of really obvious defeats. And there are games where, you know, just his presence creates a lot of opportunity, because he gets people, more attention, and then his teammates perform some havoc. Remember two seasons ago, Zidane had like two teams, and he tried to rest Ronaldo in certain games. They actually did well with Asensio and a lot of those players coming on board. But for what we know them for, they're just a different team without Ronaldo.
And now what's also interesting is that Luka Modric, he's also made headlines in Spain, and he also didn't start in the Madrid's previous game. Now I wonder if that's going to make an impact on the squad, because as you can see with Real Madrid, no Ronaldo, Modric seems unsettled. You know, do you think they're going to actually challenge for the La Liga title this year?
It's early days, but as we know in Madrid, if you lose too many points, and Barcelona, they managed to claw a win, you know, courtesy of VAR last week, you know, which was priceless, because for them, you know, every 3 points they can gather keeps them away until the title is decided when they play those El Clasicos, and so they want to gather as much points as possible, and you know, this season is going to look like a three-horse race because Atletico Madrid definitely will have a say in the conversation, because they look like a lot more settled of all three.
Well, we'll see how that pans out for the rest of the season. We're going to take another short break, and we're going to touch on some general news and something that we like to always discuss near the end of the show, our fantasy picks and players that might have let you down, given you a heartache, or maybe even surprised you. Catch us just after the break.
Want to witness the world's best football league from a front row seat? SuperSport puts you front and center for all the scintillating action of the Premier League, La Liga, UEFA Champions League, the Europa Nations League, and the Premiership, and now the Serie A. Follow the stars in every game that matters, live in HD. The 2018-19 season is front row football on SuperSport.
Welcome back to the podcast of Football Travelers here at Pitch Invasion. Now, Amika, interesting news. Spiva Shabalala off to Turkey. How does that sit well with you? I mean, he's well past 30 and...
He's 33.
Why now?
You know, I thought Shaba should have gone to Europe in 2009. I mean, some people say to me, oh, after he scored the opening goal of the World. I thought in 2009, during the Confed Cup, that was when Shaba was at his peak. And that is 9 years ago.
9 years later.
So 9 years ago, he was 23, 24. So, I mean, Shaba is going now at 33. I hope he has a great time there. And maybe he gets a reminder of why he should have been there a lot more. Maybe if he gets, Turkey's not a bad place because they do pay well there. He could maybe do well and earn a move to one of the big teams and enjoy maybe three seasons there, because he's very mature. He's a very good player and he's an exciting player. And people will be excited to also have him there, because that goal that he scored in the World Cup in 2010 was played back over and over and over. Most people remember that. So I'm happy for him that he's gone, but I think he should have gone a long time. He says that he thinks that this is God's time. I hope that he...
Yeah, well, there's God's time and then there's football time. I mean, at 33 years old, to make your first move abroad, you know, I'm not so sure that's such a wise move in terms of, you know, trying to bridge that gap, like you said, 9 years ago, when he could have possibly gone on to be an international star. And which is my problem with African players when it comes to moving abroad. It's either they don't make the move or they move too late. And in Shaba's case, I feel like it's too late.
When you're the king at Chiefs, Shaba...
He's been the king at Chiefs for 10 years.
Shaba and Kune, and for a long time, yeah. You know, even well, I think I think three of them, you know, they were there for at their peak, you know. So let's see what happens. Maybe his move will be a good inspiration for a few others to try and take the plunge. But he's been a servant he's been for Chiefs, I must say.
He's been a good servant for Chiefs and for South African football. The only positive I hope is that it does inspire more players playing overseas, because touching on South African football, I mean, Stuart Baxter's just released his squad for the upcoming CAF qualifier, AFCON qualifier, that is, against Libya, and only 5 players who play abroad.
Yeah, I mean, if there's one player that I thought under Baxter was the peanut boy for him, is Tokelo Ranti. But he's just completely gone under the radar.
Disappeared.
I mean, he's disappeared. Ranti, the reason Bafana still had a chance in this campaign is Ranti's performance against Nigeria. It's almost forgotten, because Nigeria eventually, you know, picked up and became a much different team from the team that South Africa beat. They've got to try and get a result against Libya, which hopefully we'll talk about much later when the game comes closer. But, you know, looking at the selection that they have, you know, I did say something 2 weeks ago about Percy Tau, or was it last week about Percy Tau and his move.
Opened his account for his new team.
Yes, he scored, and a good goal. This is his chance to add up to his international record, which will improve his chances of moving back to Bournemouth. So I'm happy. I'm looking forward to seeing what he will do in that game. And hopefully he gets a goal or two. You know, something that I enjoyed in the game against Burkina Faso is how Kune hit that.
A player that I would have liked to have seen just return to the national side is Kermit Erasmus. You know, he's an interesting player for me, and I feel like he's a player that we've sort of misunderstood his ability. He reminds me of Romario. Stocky, quick, and he's got the eye for goal. And I think, you know, he could be such a great addition to the national squad. But having looked at the team, there is some firepower in that national team.
Listen, Kermit Erasmus, even for Bafana, never had a great scoring record. In fact, at a point, Ndlula was scoring goals for Bafana.
Against who, though, Amika? No, against who?
Strange. When Shakes first came back this time around, it was Ndlula who was leading the line, and he got some good goals. Whereas Kermit, you know, just huffed and puffed. I think that Keegan Dolly, I want to see once more. And then hopefully, you know...
I mean, Percy Tau, Keegan Dolly, Mutiba, that combination of players, that is just a serious starting lineup up front.
It's a good lineup. If only Sibusiso Vilakazi can realize that he's not Johan Cruyff and touch the ball less.
Why not dream big? Why not? Why not? Now, something else that was interesting going back to Tottenham was Hugo Lloris. Obviously, he was caught up in a drunk driving charge, and Poch has backed him. Now, if you were the manager, Amika, of Tottenham, would you have dropped him?
Well, in case you don't know, I was a manager of a university football team years ago. I was also
Did they have a keeper that was in charge for drunk driving?
They were worse. The players would go out and party all night, and we had games the following day. I was also director of the professional football team in my hometown, Sharks. Football players will always be football players. You know, one thing I found about them is after the game, they just want to go have fun. The question is just that when you're a professional player, there are boundaries. And then with social media, you can't be too careful what happens with you outside the game, because it can come back and bite you. But serious managers will back their player. They will find them, maybe openly, sometimes they'll find them secretly, but openly you have to back the player to because, I mean, Hugo Lloris is one of the best keepers in the world. This is a world champion.
Cup winning.
It's a world champion. But
does it send the right message if Tottenham do not drop him?
I wouldn't drop him because...
You wouldn't?
Because, look, you saw him against Man United, and you've seen him for Spurs this season. He's like a 12th man in that team, because he gives them a lot of goals. Sometimes when you think that the defense has been breached, Lloris is almost like a sweeper keeper. He comes out and takes a lot of chances. So I would back him. I would back him. But I would go behind and reprimand him. Maybe even fine him. But openly, I would back him.
Well, I'll tell you what, who's backing Lloris are the fantasy owners. And that's where we're moving to next. So, fantasy, Amika, can I just say something before we even touch on this? I said this from the first episode, that Paul Pogba is going to be a big letdown on fantasy, and so far, it's paying dividends. I said to myself, and I said to my brother, in fact, when we were picking our fantasy squads, leave Paul Pogba out. I know the price is tempting. He's 8. He's cheaper than a lot of the world-class players, and it's just not working out for Pogba.
I went with Pogba because I thought with the World Cup momentum.
Even after my recommendation,
and then after,
he still went
yes,
for Pogba.
I mean, the first game when he was captain, and I see that, okay, like he's captain, I thought, you know, maybe he will... and I still wouldn't give up on him. The good thing is that there's 1 week of games before the international break. Maybe when he goes and plays for France, he'll be recharged and he'll come back. But let's see what happens in the one game there. But one big shock was Mourinho deciding to play Ander Herrera in defense. Imagine if anyone picked him.
Oh.
I mean, you play him in defense and...
So who are you going with this weekend? Who's your top pick? Who's the guy that you think this weekend, guys, that's the one you should either put as captain or you have to have in your team?
Lucas Moura.
Lucas Moura. You're jumping on the bandwagon.
You know, it's not a bandwagon. Lucas Moura, a few seasons ago, he was, after Ronaldinho, he was almost like the next, before even all this talk about Neymar and the rest of them,
Lucas Moura was the man.
He was the man. And, you know, he was talked about because he was an exciting winger. But what I saw yesterday, so in that game against Man United, was him playing from the middle and playing almost like a playmaker and going from like a number 10. He was a beauty. His passing, his range, and then the way he went past Smalling.
Hot enough through butter.
Yeah.
Now, what does that mean for Son, though, coming back? That's if South Korea win the Asian Games.
Well,
what does that mean? Pochettino, obviously, he's a master tactician, and, you know, he's good at slotting his players in the right position. But now, with Son coming back into the fray, I mean, Son's numbers speak for themselves. Son, I think last season in fantasy, he was really up there with the numbers.
The one thing I've seen this season, it's like, you know how Dejan Lovren sees himself as the best defender in the world, and then he comes up in the World Cup, he's injured, And Joe Gomez steps in there, and you start wondering, you know, if Lovren is fit, will he get his shirt back? I don't think so.
Well, you're the Liverpool man.
No, I'm just saying, I don't think so. So most people probably wouldn't put even Joe Gomez in their team, but I would put him in my team because, one, clean sheets all the way,
mm-hmm.
and very decent performance as he's put in so far. So on the same wavelength, I would say I would go with
Gomez.
Not Gomez. I'm talking about Lucas Moura.
Yeah. Interesting. For me, I think I'm giving Aubameyang one more chance.
No.
I'm giving him one more chance. It's Cardiff away. He's due a goal, and you've got to give Aubameyang one more chance.
One surprise for me, I went for Guendouzi.
Didn't have the best of games.
Nah, he didn't.
Didn't have the best.
I think for one reason, he seems to be all over the place. He goes to the fullback, he gets the pass, he goes everywhere, and then he ran out of gas. Somehow, I think maybe he'll have a better game if he plays more with Torreira.
Yes.
And that now gives a problem for Xhaka. And then Ozil,
Don't get me started with Mesut Ozil, right? So let's not even get there. But now, matches of the weekend. Give me your top picks, because we have Burnley against Man United. And this game, for me, is going to decide a lot of things. Because should Man United lose that game?
Here's the funny thing.
I think heads are going to roll. If it's Jose, it's somebody in the team.
In the office pool, everyone knows me to be the one who always goes for upsets. So this week I said, for once, I'm not going to go for upsets. And then everybody in the office gathered around my desk, and I was making my picks. And then I came to Man United, Burnley versus Man United, and I said Burnley to Man United. And everyone said, that's not an upset.
Exactly. So I was jumping into it. It's not an upset. I mean, you remember, I think it was Jesse Lingard late at Old Trafford last season that needed to rescue Man United from Burnley. And that's not an upset at all. I see a draw there. I think Burnley will have been buoyed by the fact that they're not scared of Man United anymore. They went to Old Trafford and really did a number on them last year.
Two games I'm looking forward to in this season.
They're there for the taking.
Two games I'm looking forward to this season. Watford versus Tottenham.
London Derby.
Both teams have won three games each. And people have not taken note of how good Watford have been this season. And this is a team that sold Richarlison. And they've been very good. And they're going to play against Tottenham. It's so difficult to see. Typically, I would have said, you know, I'll go for Tottenham in this game. But with the way Watford is playing, it's so difficult to bet against them getting a result out of this game. But that's an exciting game to look forward to. And then, of course, you've got, on the first day, you've got Chelsea versus Bournemouth. Bournemouth has also been, you know, getting some good results, and Chelsea, as good as they've been this season, the way Newcastle got a goal tells you that defensively, and the fact that Conte is not doing his job of sitting behind in front of the back four, unless the coach changes, which I doubt he'll do because he's set out to be more attacking. Then of course there is Manchester City versus Newcastle. You know what Newcastle will do. I mean, Sarri was complaining that he doesn't like the way Benitez is.
There's going to be a big bus pop
but
in that game.
That will
That's
be
one thing for sure.
That would be. I mean, if Wolves did it against Chelsea,
I just don't think. Look, Newcastle don't have the quality that Wolves have, and to me, the problem with Newcastle against Chelsea was that at some point they actually needed to kick into gear and say, you know what? It's 1-1, let's go for it. Here's one thing I never understand about the psyche of the so-called smaller teams, especially when they're at home, is why set up defensively and expect, you know, an onslaught of an attack from the so-called stronger teams?
Because you know,
and then the moment
you
go a goal down,
yeah,
you want to switch it. Why not start that way? So that in case you do get that early goal, you can go back and defend.
Rafa Benitez always has his whole mindset, and that's one thing that has kept.
That's exactly why he was kicked out of Madrid.
But that's also why at Newcastle he managed to get them to 10th position last season. The one thing I see with Wolves actually, you know,
they have
Ruben Neves and João Moutinho in midfield, so they matched Man City with quality. in that midfield. I think that Newcastle will try and frustrate Man City in that game. But, you know, another game, Leicester versus Liverpool, Jamie Vardy always used to score against Liverpool and he's banned from this game. But we'll see. We'll see what happens in that game.
I'm looking forward to Milan versus Roma because these are two sides that desperately need a win. Roma still, you know, despite all their signings, they're still finding it hard to get 3 points. Milan had a 2-goal lead against Napoli and they blew that away. Two old rivals at the San Siro, and those two games, that game for me with those two teams, I think that's going to be a cracker because they really need 3 points. Another game for me that I think we also need to touch on a local perspective, the MTN 8 semis. Who do you see in the final?
I think that, you know, Cape Town City, because Sundown seems to be...
You think they'll be a bit tired from the...
Yeah, I think that they'll be a bit jaded. And as much as they'll come back wanting to try and get something out of it, Cape Town has a 1-goal advantage without conceding a goal. On the other hand, Kaizer Chiefs, if they can get their fans into the stadium, but the thing with
90,000 fans?
Well, I mean, look, they need a rallying call. The fact that they came back into that game means that there'll be a lot at stake. Will they... withstand Super Bowl United, who we've seen that even when you write them off, they just kind of have a way of pulling results, and they've proven to be quite a good cup team. So
that's exactly where I was going.
Yes.
That Super Sport United, you know, they always know how to get it done in cups, and especially when they're at this stage of the competition, to them they're like sharks and they smell blood in the water. I won't be surprised if they do edge our Chiefs, and the Cape Town City game, Sundowns, you know what? I think Pizzo's going to react. He's going to expect a reaction from his team. And as much as I really respect Benny and Cape Town City, I love what they're doing there. But I think Sundowns know, listen, we're out of this competition. Let's focus on something else. Because the CAF competition stretches throughout the whole year.
Oh, yes.
And this, we're talking about in a matter of weeks. They could win this competition.
I love the MTN 8.
I think
MTN 8 is got a lot of money, but it's also got a very short window.
Yes.
You know, short, sharp, and exciting. And the fact that the semifinals is two legs makes it even all the more exciting. The dream final will be Sundowns versus Kaizer Chiefs. But one thing we've seen, you know, just like last year where, you know, everyone expected to see the big teams and then somehow Free State has got to the final. I think that we're going to see, you know, another upset. And probably it will be Super Sport United versus Cape Town City in the finals.
And if that is the case, who do you see winning? Super Sport Cape Town City in the final, as predicted by you, who do you think would win that?
Super Sports United. Yes.
You know what? As a football purist, I would actually like to see Cape Town City.
I would love that.
Right? Because I think that's just going to revive the interest in South African football. And also it's going to put a feather into Benny McCarthy's cap. Because, you know, here's a guy with a lot to prove, very highly qualified. And to give Cape Town City a trophy in such a short space of time, that opens him up to bigger jobs. Because I was surprised, in fact, when Pirates were looking for a coach at the time, I was really sure that they were going to get Benny.
But I think Benny still has to spend a bit more time at Cape Town City.
Teams come calling.
You have to build consistency somewhere. If you look at Pizzo, what he's done at Sundowns. We might say, okay, look, that's almost one of the biggest, or probably the biggest team. But Chiefs fans might have something to say, and Pirates have something to say about it. But, you know, Benny needs to push Cape Town City further over the next two seasons. He's young. He'll get his opportunities. But he needs to try and win something. Just like the way Gavin won three PSL titles at SuperSport United. And then he moved on to prove the same point at Bidvest. So let's see what happens, not just with the MTN 8, but also the rest of the season. This season is quite open. I don't see any team right now really pulling up as a team to watch out for this season, because it's just been one season where the surprise team has been Steve Compeller's team.
Just before we end off, on this note, Amika, who surprised you in terms of a disappointing performance this week? Who are you calling out? Who's the one player, manager, who surprised you this weekend that you thought, you know what, really let people down?
Mourinho.
Mourinho.
Yes. that's so easy. I mean, he's just dropped to a new low, and you know, very disappointing because he's, for me, I think, one of the most enigmatic characters in the game. But one thing that we've seen, especially with his recent record with Real Madrid and Chelsea, is like when he gets to the third season, he has this almost, it's almost like he's like he doesn't have any more attraction to try and win something or try and prove something. It's like, and that's why he can still go out and say, you know, I've won three titles. You know, you're as good as your last game. That's the reason why, you know, Real Madrid sacked Carlo Ancelotti.
Yes.
You know, and despite
big teams when they make ruthless decisions, right, they're thinking about themselves in the long run. So for me, yeah, the most disappointing, it has to be Jose without a shadow of doubt.
And you know who I fear for now? Manuel Pellegrini, for all his great record and everything.
Really under the cosh now.
I think that, you know, when I look at people like Alan Pardew, I look at Sam Allardyce, I look at some of those managers who, you know, usually they call them when the chips are down to come and rescue teams. Nobody's calling Harry Redknapp anymore. And I think that Pellegrini, Alan Kirbishley has left a long time ago. He's become more of a TV pundit. Pellegrini, one more loss and all the, I mean, there'll be like an international break, and the Arno Sullivan and his gang at West Ham will just say, we don't want the fans on our face. They'll just look for a younger manager.
Yeah, and you know how West Ham fans get when things don't go their way. Well, that brings an end to another episode of Pitch Invasion. We sure hope that you enjoyed all the news, information, debates, and stories that we brought to you. Hopefully, you'll catch us again on another exciting episode next week. For us in the studio with Amika, I'm Tola Magwaza.
Hey, I'm looking forward to another clean sheet at the King Power Stadium. Liverpool versus Leicester.
Oh, there you go. Leicester. Another clean sheet for Leicester. That should Liverpool. Be good news for anybody that's Michael in their fantasy team.
Yeah. All right.
Thank you and goodbye.